Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
And welcome to First Things First. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. I am Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We start year two today. We start the NFL season today. But in the meantime, we've got a big show for you today. Lots to get to. John Gruden tells us why Khalil Mack is now a Bear. Bill Belichick is worried about the Texans. And the Eagles have finally made a quarterback decision. That is where we start this morning with news out of Philly. Eagles kicking off their season Thursday night against the Falcons with Nick Foles as their quarterback. He was named their starter yesterday. Not a big surprise, considering Carson Wentz still isn't cleared for contact. Head coach Doug Peterson said this move protects Wentz for the next 10 years. But, Nick, how vulnerable are the Eagles this week without Carson Wentz, with Nick Foles, who had a very shaky preseason, at the helm?
And Nick Foles, who was very shaky in the last game that these two teams played, the last bad game Nick Foles played that counted, if we're just going to throw out the preseason, the divisional game between the Eagles and Falcons. And so how vulnerable are they? Well, Vegas says it's a two-point spread, even though the game's in Philadelphia. So that leads you to believe these two teams without Carson Wentz in the lineup are about even. I'll add to it. I think the Falcons went strength on strength in the draft, drafting Calvin Ridley in the first round. And the only part of the Eagles' defense that I think is a little vulnerable is their secondary. So you add all of that. Also, we've talked about how Philly is trying to move on from last year, not have a Super Bowl or championship hangover. I would imagine the hardest that could possibly be is your first game since the Super Bowl in your stadium. They unveil the banner. You know you're on national TV starting the NFL season because you're the Super Bowl champions. For all those reasons, like, I would not be shocked at all if Atlanta wins. Atlanta's a really good team who was a really good team last year, who was a goal line stand away from beating Philadelphia in the divisional round. So, yes, highly vulnerable without Carson Wentz.
Yeah, even if Carson Wentz was in the game, you say, is Philadelphia vulnerable because Carson Wentz hadn't played? I'd be like, yes. So now with Nick Foles in the game, are they vulnerable? Absolutely. Well, what's the biggest difference? Probably the biggest difference is Nick Foles' inability to be consistently throwing the football, especially on third down, and the red zone. If you look at the difference between that divisional game, Nick, that you talked about, where the Atlanta Falcons were in that game and one play there at the end could have easily won that game, man, it's how he performed in the red zone and third down against the Minnesota Vikings and the New England Patriots. So is he going to go right back to that after what you mentioned, Jenna, having a poor preseason? We can't expect that. We can't expect him to play like he did against the Vikings. So I am concerned. Are they vulnerable in this first game? Yes, and I would say more so than most champions that we see, because most champions, you know, they have their starting quarterback. We can't forget that Nick Foles is a backup, even though they are Super Bowl champs.
And you mentioned the red zone and third downs. So this is something to watch for Philly all year long, and it's something to watch for Atlanta all year long. Philly last year was historically great on third down, particularly third and long. NFL history says that is not duplicable year over year. Teams that are astronomically good on third down in one year, they regress much closer to league average the following year. And that's, by the way, certainly with Wentz. And now with Nick Foles, you're going to see it even more so, at least early on. And then in the red zone, what was the difference between the 2016 Falcons and the 2017 Falcons? 2016, one of the highest scoring teams in NFL history, up there with the 98 Vikings, 07 Pats, one of Peyton's years in Denver. The difference was not what they did between the 20s. The difference was efficiency in the red zone. Going to Steve Sarkisian from Kyle Shanahan was where they had an enormous drop-off in the red zone, and that's how their season ended. They had a first and goal from the 9, down 5 points, and amazingly, on the first 3 downs, they don't throw a single pass into the end zone. They throw a pass to a fullback, but not a pass into the end zone. They don't even have one pass cross the goal line until it's fourth in their season. If that goes differently, then we're not talking about the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. We maybe are talking about the Super Bowl champion Atlanta Falcons.
But let's stick with the Eagles here. What's the one thing we said about the Eagles all offseason is that they're so deep, they're so stacked at so many different positions. Do they have enough on defense, on that offensive line, to withstand Nick Foles a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, starting with his inconsistency?
Absolutely. But the reason why they could do that was because the players stepped up. You know, there was question marks as far as their tackle. Vitae, he stepped up last year. Hadn't played well this preseason. Nick Foles, he was inconsistent. Nick Wright gave up on the Eagles, but rightfully so. I mean, rightfully so. They hadn't earned that trust because Nick Foles being inconsistent. I think they're going to be better running the ball, and especially running the ball to their left side. Jason Peters will be back. So now I believe they have to lean more on that. Defensively, they're going to get after the quarterback. Atlanta's offensive line is going to have a lot of pressure. Their defensive line is better than it was last year, that being the Eagles. And Jordan Hicks, who runs their defense, their middle linebacker, he's back in the lineup. So, yes, Jenna, they are stacked. They are deep offensively and defensively. And the one reason why I liked them last year, because they got good big people. And they still have that.
And those good big people are going to have to carry them in this week one game. I'm not going to say for the early part of the season, because after Atlanta, they get a Tampa team that might be the worst team in the NFC. And then they get a Colts team that does not have good big people. And you would imagine they can overpower them. But against Atlanta, they are going to have to win a game the way they won the divisional game, a low-scoring defensive game. Like, let's not be confused by the fact that Philly beat the Pats in a shootout. That is an outlier performance. The way they beat Minnesota is more. Now, I know they scored a bunch of points, but Philly's defense equaled Minnesota's offense in that game from a point standpoint. Minnesota scored a touchdown. Philly had a pick six, and that changed the game. You cannot go into week one and say, we're going to beat Atlanta 31-28. At least I don't feel like you can. Not with Nick Foles, your quarterback. What you can go into the game against Atlanta saying is, we're going to obliterate this Falcons offensive line, which is actually a good offensive line. We're going to make it so they are one-dimensional. They cannot run the football, and they do not have more than 2.5 seconds to pass the football, because our front seven is going to win this game. That's got to be the outlook for Philly, who also has injuries at wide receiver. Darren Sproles coming back after missing over a year.
Alshon Jeffrey is
right now on the injured list. Jason Peters has missed almost a year. Like, a lot of parts of that offense are not going to be fully operational.
Doug Peterson really went out of his way to say, this is a move we're making because we want Wentz for the future and we don't need him for the first 1, 2, 3 games. But realistically, how soon do you think before the Eagles turn around and say, okay, we need to put Wentz back in? Well, when do you think he might be back?
We don't know. They had him. I'm surprised that he's not playing the first game after starting training camp, where it appears they said he would start the first day. They didn't tell us that he wasn't going to be clear for contact all of training camp. So we just anticipated he's not starting on PUP. He's starting the first day of practice. Man,
so
he's going to
be
ready. No, we can't guesstimate when he's going to be ready. But given the schedule that Nick pointed out, man, if they can get through this week number one with a win, man, they got a luxury of being able to sit back and maybe wait in a few weeks, and we might not see Carson Wentz maybe till the end of September at the earliest.
Because after the first 3 weeks, they reach the single most difficult part of their schedule, at least when we look at it going into a season.
Now.
And one of the most difficult parts of any schedule any team has in the league. After week 3, from week 4 to 8, they have 5 games. 3 are on the road, 4 are against playoff teams from last year. The one that isn't a playoff team from last year is a road game against the Giants, who we think is going to be better. They play Carolina. They play Jacksonville. They play a Titans team that made the playoffs and one team. Minnesota as well in Philadelphia, a rematch of the NFC Championship game. Like, they need Wentz fully healthy, not just for the next 10 years, but for the 10 weeks following week one. So I understand why they're doing it, but one game difference in the standing last year, and I don't think they're Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, but one thing, too, NFL teams, Coach Mangini gets on you all the time. They say they're not looking at the schedule, Nick, but I guarantee you Doug Peterson's looked at that schedule and realized, man, if I can get through these first couple weeks without Carson Wentz before we go into that tough stretch. Then we'll bring Carson back.
Well, the schedule for the Eagles starts with the Falcons. Eagles hosting the Falcons on Thursday night with Nick Foles at the helm for Philadelphia. We'll talk much more about this coming up. But on the other side, will Le'Veon Bell pay a price for missing so much time? That's next on First Things First. We will get to Le'Veon Bell in a second, but first, week one of college football, great catch from Texas Tech's T.J. Vasher.
Oh, this was nasty right here. This was nasty. This is the one people thought it was the OBJ, but no, he brings that left hand on it to build secure it to the ground. Great catch now for T.J. Vasher. Unbelievable. Texas Tech, they like to throw the ball. Man, that was a special catch right there.
I'm probably prisoner of the moment in this, but I can't remember an opening week into college football with so many spectacular catches in big games.
Especially because it's warmer, a little more tacky on the gloves.
VMI, it's Toledo, just watch like closely. That. It's going to happen fast. The shortest punt return ever. Toledo won 66-3.
This is the way they coach it up. They tell you, dive for the point in front of the kicker and take the ball off his foot. No, literally.
I mean, honestly.
Take the ball off the punter's foot.
Danielle and I, that's my wife, were watching this highlight. I said, you got to see this. She said, she's like, I didn't know that was allowed. Why don't they always do that? Well, they tried to. Very difficult. Oh, my God.
That was Devin DuVernay using every inch of his body to make a great touchdown catch in the Texas-Maryland game.
Diving like his coach into the gold room. Look at that. That's a hell of a play by Longhorns.
Yeah, Longhorns didn't have many things to cheer about holding that L against the Big Ten in Maryland without their coach.
Maryland's
get right. That's a great catch, though.
Maryland's get right game every year, evidently, is Texas.
Yeah, here you go, Nick. Syracuse, Western Michigan, Jamal Custis with the nice one-handed grab. Burns the D, gets into the end zone.
Going to see a lot. Oh, this is Syracuse.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you had to overcome the school. This is double good.
Oh my goodness. You know what? I was considering abandoning my school football-wise this year.
Like
this
30
play,
seconds
yeah,
ago.
I know, but this play might have brought me back. Let's go, Orange. Big East title in play.
Can I get my quarterback to lead my guy to the sideline?
We're in the ACC, though. Oh, that no ain't problem. Great for us.
All right, moving on. New topic. The Steelers will open their season in Cleveland on Sunday. They hope to have Le'Veon Bell by then, but he still hasn't shown up for practice. And he still hasn't signed his $14.5 million franchise tender. And as a result, his bosses are none too happy. Steelers GM Kevin Colbert released the following statement. We are disappointed Le'Veon Bell has not signed his franchise tender and rejoined his teammates. We will continue to focus on preparing the players on our roster for our regular season opener against the Browns. Chris, how big of a deal is it that Bell still hasn't signed that franchise tag?
One of my biggest issues with the Pittsburgh Steelers is their messaging point. They seem in the last several years, they can't stay on message. As far as, what are we trying to do? Like, they should be trying to win a Super Bowl. With this collection of talent that they've had, they've underachieved the last several years, and it becomes difficult when players on the team, when general manager has to issue a statement that don't know when he's going to be here. I wish I could talk about it. I'm disappointed. His disappointment speaks to the lack of communication, the lack of continuity, because there shouldn't be a misunderstanding between L. Bell and the general manager. He's either coming in Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Wednesday's the last day because you're actually starting to practice. But Monday and Tuesday, you are putting in the game plan to get ready for the Cleveland Browns. So for me, of the teams that we talk about have Super Bowl aspiration, who is off point, message point today? And I'd say all those other teams are on point in the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're still waiting for one of their best players who's going to play a significant role if they're going to be Super Bowl champs, Nick.
Listen, on the vast majority of teams in the league, he'd be their most skilled player on the roster. This team has Antonio Brown, so we don't talk about him as their best guy, take quarterbacks out of it. But that's how good he is. Now, as far as the team being disappointed, listen, L. Bell could release his own statement. I'm very disappointed that I've been franchise tagged for the second straight year despite production that would warrant a long-term contract. I'm very disappointed that Aaron Donald got a contract early. Khalil Mack got a contract early. Odell Beckham got a contract early. Aaron Rodgers got a contract early. And I'm on my second year of a franchise tag, so I'm disappointed too. But is it good for Pittsburgh? Of course not. Last year, he got in on Labor Day. And we saw, and we can show the audience, he was one player in September while he was catching up to speed, and one player the rest of the year. Rushing yards per game in September, 60. Rest of the year, 90. Yards per carry, less than 3.5 to more than 4. Receiving yards, less than 20 a game to more than 50 a game. Yards per catch, 4.5 to 8.5. Like, that's two different players. The guy on the left is below replacement level NFL running back. The guy on the right is Le'Veon Bell. So a guy who deserves to be paid at the top of the market. But this isn't great for them because this is something of a make-or-break year for Pittsburgh. There's a long list of teams in NFL history that it's taken to the fifth year of straight playoff appearances to actually make or win a Super Bowl. Dungy's Colts were like this. There's a handful of others. There's not many that went five straight years in the playoffs, didn't make a Super Bowl, and then made it down the road. This is a critical year for Pittsburgh.
There are a lot of fans that are asking, well, if he's so great, if he's such a fantastic skilled player, so valuable to this team, you saw it after the first three games, why not pay him? Why not extend him? Like, what do you think that the Steelers are thinking?
Pittsburgh,
for years,
they have not signed players to second and third contracts. Guys that they've drafted, they've had a plan, and that plan's been very, very successful. What they've done of late is they've signed Ben. They always sign their quarterbacks. Of course, and they signed Antonio to a long extension. If you look at how much money they already have allocated to the offense, I didn't think they were going to sign L. Bell. So I'm not disappointed. I like to see players get paid, but there's also a business model. I see what Pittsburgh's doing. They can't afford to sign him to $15, $18 million when Antonio's making $17 and Ben is making $20. So, no, the money is not there. So I didn't expect it. But you do, he is going to sign the tender, and they are still going to have Super Bowl aspirations if he has a long-term contract or if he has a one-year contract.
Listen, last year, what I'm not going to do with the Steelers is say, oh, they'll be fine because the first 3 weeks of the year they have soft competition. And by the way, defensively they do. They play Kansas City, who's got bad defense. Tampa's got a bad defense.
But this is the team that plays up and down to their competition almost more than anyone else.
Well, and this is a team that last year was 13-1. Against everyone that wasn't New England or Jacksonville. Who was the one? A week 3 loss to the Chicago Bears in Chicago when Le'Veon Bell was wholly unproductive. So, like, does that sound anything like maybe a week 3 game against Tampa this year or a week 1 game against Cleveland? Like, that's absolutely in play for a team that is particularly plays down to its competition on the road, and two of its 3 early games are on the road. And so, no, this could absolutely be meaningful. Now, Pittsburgh also could resend the tag. Pittsburgh does have some amount of leverage here where if they really wanted to see if how much poker Le'Veon wants to play, they could resend the tag a few days before the season and see who else wants to pay.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's been a classy organization. I don't see them doing that. It's just there's certain players you can get paid, but you're not going to get paid for certain teams. The pie is only so big.
Right.
All right. And if they have 3/4 of the pie going to allocate to their offense, they already got a bad defense. If they sign L. Bell, how would they ever be able to repair that over the years? So I'm not like Nick. This is not a critical year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, as long as he's there, they're going to have a chance to win. Tom Brady's only going to be in New England so many more years. Ben Roethlisberger could be the best quarterback in the AFC for the next after he retires for those next couple years.
So let me just ask this because I'm very surprised to hear you say you don't think it's a critical year for the Steelers. We agree that this is, in all likelihood, Le'Veon's last year with Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. So that's a no-brainer.
Right. So if they don't get to a Super Bowl this year, offensively, there's no reason to believe they're going to be as dangerous next year.
No, but I believe his offensive productivity, is a lot of it can be replaced because of what they do. Like, I have been on offense that have been prolific like this, and the running back, he can be replaced. Now, can you replace him as a wide receiver? The thing about it, you can't pay the guy $15 million the way their business model is. So I only got him for one more year. So Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe, will be able to move on and still be successful, just like they've moved on from every other great player that they've had.
Just real quick, how late into the week could he show up and still realistically play on Sunday?
He can show up on Friday and play on Sunday, but he's not going to be an all-pro running back. There's going to be another guy out there wearing 2-6. All right? The real 2-6 will show up in 3 weeks. Football is a game that you get better practicing. The only conditioning that you can get, you can't get this at a gym. You can't get this in South Florida where he's supposed to be training. Right. All right? You can't simulate game action.
All right. Let's take a little turn now. Time for Nick's Fantasy Update, sponsored by DraftKings. All right, Nick, you are picking one quarterback today. Mm-hmm. Ready? Give us one stud and then one value pick.
All right, so on the stud side of things, I'm going with the New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, not only because I think he might win league MVP this year, not only because Mark Ingram isn't there, so you would expect them to rely more on the passing game, but they are playing arguably the worst defense in the entire NFL, Tampa Bay. They are in New Orleans in a controlled environment. I know he's expensive. Bite the bullet, pay the $6,800 on DraftKings and take Drew Brees.
Yeah, because Fitzy's going to be throwing it to New Orleans defense, too. Fitzy going to be starting for Tampa Bay in New Orleans. I like that Drew Brees right there.
All right, so my value pick is not Fitzy. My value pick is Pat Mahomes. He's only 6,000 on DraftKings.
Be careful, people.
It's less than guys like Russell Wilson. He might throw a couple picks.
This one smells like home cooking.
Oh, listen, the Chargers, they don't have Jason Verrett due to injury. I expect a high-scoring game out west. Nice weather in California. Check the weather report like my man CeCe told me to. Pat Mahomes as a value pick at only 6,000 DraftKings dollars. Drew Brees, my stud. Pat Mahomes, you're trying to save a little money on your quarterback.
Haven't we missed this a little bit?
I've missed it so much. Nick's picks coming back soon.
First Things First is sponsored by DraftKings. Play the free DraftKings team pick'em to win your share of $1 million today. Back here on First Things First, time for us to go viral. Klay Thompson has plenty to celebrate this offseason after winning his third ring in 4 years. Here he is overseas in Qatar, living his best life, riding camels.
Look at Klay. Klay really does enjoy the off season. Yeah, grows his hair out, stops shaving,
gets on camels. Klay hopped on the gram, posted a picture of himself, Tracy McGrady, Mello, Luke Walton, with the caption, "Future Big Three champ." In his comments, Klay told KD he could be a super sub, while Draymond posted 300 laughing emojis.
Klay is impossible not to like. His production is always the same.
Yes.
He's a great player both sides of the ball and is just permanently chill.
Absolutely. I believe he might be the most missed of them, too, because of all the different things he had. Probably their best defensive player. Mm-hmm. All right? I'm going to get my shots. I don't care who y'all sign. Yeah. And I'm going to relax and get away from it. I like Klay.
And can we just zoom in real quick on what Klay looks like now this off? I mean,
I think it's a great
look.
His
hair's grown out. The beard. Look at Klay Thompson. He told KD he could only shoot 4-pointers in the big three if he joined the team. Oh, my. Mello, by the way, Mello, who does not like joking on Instagram, told him to get the bleep out of here. Mello never knows how to take a joke
at all.
My guy Mello is the opposite of permachill.
I don't know why he'd be so defensive given he don't play that defense.
Right. Why? Time now for some stories to start your morning. Yesterday, Josh Gordon was a full participant in practice. He had tweaked his hamstring, but looked good over the weekend. Hugh Jackson says Gordon's on schedule to play against the Steelers on Sunday, but he won't start. CeCe, what are realistic week one expectations for Josh Gordon?
Probably to play around 20 plays. I mean, a bad hamstring, especially for a big, muscular guy like him, man, they really, really need him. But I would spot playing 20, 25 plays. Typically, NFL team's going to have 65 to 70 plays.
Listen, if he's going to play week one, then there is nothing Josh Gordon could have done short of being suspended or not showing back up to not play week one. He missed the first three weeks of training camp while he was tending to his own mental and personal health, which is fine. And then he got hurt right when he got back. You talk about how important it is to practice football to get better at football. This guy's played very little football over the last 3 years, missed almost all of training camp, and he's still going to play week one.
I know Joe Hayden, who's also a cornerback, former Brown, playing for the Steelers. He don't want to see Josh Gordon help.
Not even for 20 snaps, nope.
All right, the 49ers got some bad news over the weekend. One of their key offseason acquisitions, running back Jerick McKinnon, is out for the season with a torn ACL. See, how's this loss going to impact the Niners' offense?
Oh, it's going to affect Kyle Shanahan, how he wants to do things. I think he would have been their number one receiver, the most dependable guy. Affects the offensive core of the play calling. Going to affect Jimmy Garoppolo. I told you, Nick, in season number two there that I thought Jimmy Garoppolo, watch yourself, pump your brakes a little bit. Don't get fall in love with those five games, and Jerick McKinnon, well, it will hurt his growth as his second year as a starting quarterback for San Francisco 49ers.
He's an underrated pass catcher, so I'm glad you brought that up. He was one of the better weapons out of the backfield on Minnesota last year, particularly after Dalvin Cook went down. This is a team almost totally bereft of weapons on the outside, so they're going to need him as a pass catcher for Jimmy Garoppolo. And this is, I also am skeptical that, oh, Jimmy G, who's already like he's 16-1 to win the MVP. Everyone calm down a bit. And this is a team last year that was winless through 10 weeks. Remember that when people think they can be a playoff team in the brutal NFC. This is a tough loss right before the season starts.
On to the Raiders now. Rosters were cut down to 53 this weekend, and Oakland raised some eyebrows when they cut wideout Martavis Bryant. John Gruden said it was, quote, a risk that was well worth taking. Remember, the Raiders traded a third-round pick in April for Bryant. Nick, what do you make of the move?
I mean, I guess buyer beware. The Steelers knew that this was potentially a bit of a ticking time bomb because we are now hearing that he might be facing another year-long banishment from the league. But if you're Oakland and you traded a third-round pick for him a few months ago, cutting him before you know he's definitively going to be suspended makes this a total washout. And for Oakland to be rebuilding while simultaneously having the oldest roster in the NFL in at least 6 years is, to me, two trains going in different directions. This is a bad look.
Nick, they always talk about buyer beware. And I'm right now, the Oakland Raiders, I'm concerned with John Gruden. The decision-making, the roster makeup, the age of the teams. Like, we just haven't seen someone who's managing be successful. Why would you trade a third-round pick for a guy who's been suspended twice? Not once. So for me, I question what they're doing in Oakland. This was a bad, bad gamble here.
And the day after they cut Martavis, they gave up a future fifth rounder for A.J. McCarron? Like, what's going on?
All right, finally.
I think you can find that in front of your house on Mondays and Thursdays in New York City.
The Raiders, Tuesdays and Thursdays in my neighborhood. But I got you.
The Raiders' loss is the Bears' gain, big gain. In a move that had a lot of us scratching our heads, Oakland sent their best player, Khalil Mack, in a second round and fifth round pick to the Bears for two first round picks, a third and a sixth. Head coach John Gruden with a lot of questions to answer over the weekend.
The negotiation was what it was. It was tough. It was a long process. We talked about it daily. We made an offer. I don't believe we were anywhere close to where the Bears were. And the Bears made us an offer that we thought was really unique. And very, very tough to say goodbye to a great player. But here we are today.
Nick, if you listen to Gruden's entire press conference, he had a couple of contradictory statements. Mm-hmm. What did you make of what he just said there?
Well, I think the most notable phrase is, you look at what he got, and we were nowhere close. Well, that means the deal was never getting done.
No.
It wasn't because Aaron Donald set a new standard. It wasn't because Khalil Mack just held the line at a couple million-dollar difference. Listen, the Bears paid a premium, and Oakland got the most they possibly could have gotten for the player. They got two first-round picks. I know they gave up a second, but they have a third coming back. So they got two first-round picks for Khalil Mack. That is the most you can ever get for a player being traded in the NFL. And it was still a bad deal for them. And it was still a deal that I think risks losing not only some of the fan base as far as their support. If you're a fan in Oakland, all right, you're leaving me in 2 years anyway. We're not going to be any good this year. You just gave away our best player. Like, what am I actually here for? But also potentially losing your locker room. Coach says all the time, see, you echo it. As a general manager or a head coach, and in this case, Gruden's essentially both, you tell your players a story by who you pay, but you also tell them a story by who you choose not to pay or who you deal out of town. And so if they were never close to the $90 million guaranteed, they were never close to signing him, they were never intent on re-signing their best player, and now the Raiders enter what is a weakened AFC that theoretically you thought they could compete in this season with no shot of competing whatsoever.
The Raiders are going to be under tremendous scrutiny. It's hard to get players like Khalil Mack, and it's hard to impossible to get great players who have the overall athletic character that Khalil has, off-the-field character that he has, and also the leadership. Like, you're not going to be able to find a player. Like, so if they want someone to rush the passer, they're going to draft them. They're going to draft them one of those draft picks, right? And they're hoping one day
they'll turn into Khalil Mack.
But from a business model, I would just respect it more if they'd just been like, it doesn't fit what we're trying to do. He is a great player. Did he deserve a great contract? Yes. But given what we see in the future, even though I don't see that on their roster, given what I see in the future, I didn't think right now committing that kind of dollars, because also the way the collective bargain is where you have to put that money in escrow, I didn't think the Raiders were ever going to do that. If you look at the amount of percentage that you have to finance in that, and we know, we've talked about it, their finances are the weakest in the NFL.
People should know what C's talking about. Whatever the guaranteed dollars are, you got to put that basically in a vault somewhere. So when $90 million is guaranteed to Khalil Mack, he gets a check, I think, for like $40 million in the next few weeks from Chicago. But the rest of that $90, they have to set aside. Now, that seems silly for most teams. Like, hey, guess what? We got it. But some teams, one team might not actually have
it. The Raiders.
To which I would say, if that's the case, C, then privately behind closed doors, there needs to be a discussion about whether or not the Davis family should own this football team. If they are making player decisions based on we can't set the money aside, that is not professional football in America standards.
Right. That meeting's not going to take place. It's impossible. If you look at how Al Davis got managing control of the, it was very kind of shady and everything, how he got it. But they can hide behind the model of we just can't commit that many resources to a defense that has a lot of holes. And if someone wanted to, let's say the Raiders' argument, they had Khalil Mack and their defense was still bad. If they commit all those dollars to him, how are they going to improve when they're already paying their young quarterback $20 million? They got Amari Cooper. Is it going to be expecting a deal? $18 million, $16 million in that range next year. So it becomes complicated.
We can't move on until we talk about what Khalil Mack does for this Chicago Bears defense, which is there's already a solid defense. And then you add him. How does that unit look?
Listen, this is a big bet on Mitch Trubisky. What the Bears are clearly saying is if Trubisky's no good, none of this matters anyway. So let's add a superstar player while our quarterback's cheap. This is a theme. We saw the Eagles win a Super Bowl this way. We saw the Rams contend this way. Cheap quarterback, add superstars. If you'd asked me 96 hours ago, the Bears defense, which was fringe top 10 last year, what's the single biggest need they have? I'd said a big-time pass rushing outside backer. And they are D-end outside backer. And they added the single best in the league at this. See, I think we talked about this over the weekend. This almost now has a feel of like Western Conference, Eastern Conference.
In basketball. As far as the good players from the West coming to the East in the NFL, that's the way it is. And I'm going to tell you who was not happy with this deal. Chicago was ecstatic. Matthew Stafford in Detroit, not very happy. Aaron Rodgers
not
in Green
happy.
Bay. And yo, cuz there in Minnesota, if you're going to spend $28, $30 million on your quarterback, go out and get you someone like Khalil Mack if you don't have that type of firepower from the quarterback. So this division got so much tougher. F the Bears, hypothetically. F the Bears are the worst team in this division. Oh, my goodness.
See, just for people that don't know if Matt can play week one, what did Bill Parcells say about his position as far as being ready to go?
You have to know this distinction from the beginning. Does a guy know the difference between sit and sick him? All right? Because this offseason, what was he doing? Sitting. Oh, he'll know how to sick him. He'll get on the outside. And yeah, you can do that. You can do that from your couch. A lot different than being a running back than being a rush defensive end.
All right, good stuff there. Moving on to Colin Kaepernick now. This will be his second straight season without a team. However, he will be the face of Nike's 30th anniversary ad campaign. Nike taking a gamble that it won't alienate any customers backing Kaepernick. Cap tweeted the following photo with the caption, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." CC, what was your reaction to the campaign?
I was very, very fortunate because Cap sent this to me yesterday to give me a heads up that they were going to be releasing it. So I'm happy for him. There's two sides of this for me. I'm happy that he's able to get some support by someone who's been doing it for a long, long time and someone who I respect. I was a Nike athlete for at least 25 years. A Nike athlete, went to a Nike school at Ohio State and signed with Nike and wore Nikes throughout my career. And Nike has provided me with merchandise for a long, 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 long time. So I must say that before my comments. I'm happy he has someone like Nike, because Nike does get behind edgy campaigning, and that is real support. There's people out there saying, hey, you know something, I got your back, I got your support. But when Nike gets behind you, especially in something in the athletic field, you really have some strong support. But the other side of it, I still see a kid, not a man that's trying to make people more aware, but I still see a kid who's not going to be able to play in the National Football League. We're getting ready to start our 99th season, and you still got you got quarterbacks. Blake Bortles, they're in Jacksonville. Is he the answer? You got a quarterback situation in Buffalo. They just got traded a quarterback, put in a guy who threw 5 interceptions in the first half, and the guy they drafted in the first round, not going to play him. So for me, I'm sad that he's not playing in the league, because to me, that's the end game. All right? The best players playing in the league. Cap should still be playing, but he has tremendous support from Nike. I'm happy he's able to move forward, because I don't think he'll ever put on an NFL uniform again.
And I'm going to take some slight issue with one of the things you said in the lead up, which is Nike betting that it's not going to alienate customers. No, I disagree. Nike knows it's going to alienate certain people with this. I think they are making a twofold bet. One, that there are other people that will redouble their support for Nike, or maybe folks that used to be Adidas or Under Armour fans that say, you know what, I'm going to go support Nike in support of Cap. But also, Nike is looking to me, they are looking at this on a much longer time horizon than the next quarterly balance sheet and the next stock market open. They are saying, what have we represented? This is our 30th anniversary. What have we represented for 30 years, essentially, most notably, the last 25, since Jumpman and Jordan, when we said, you know what, we are going to make a black man the face of a marketing campaign, when mm-hmm. that was, I mean, OJ had done the rent-a-car commercials, and that was about the list. And yes. Nike made a huge bet mm-hmm. on Jordan. How about Tiger? We're going to make a black man the face of our golf. We're going to create a golf industry yeah. that didn't exist. The Williams sisters with tennis.
And They have done it.
They have done it. And Nike is saying, we believe that, and Cap is not Ali, and I'm not saying he's Ali, but where I'm going to make the comparison is, Ali was much less popular while he was engaged in his peaceful protest than we fondly remember when we think back on Muhammad Ali. And they are making a bet that history will judge Cap much more favorably than he is being judged right now. And they want to be on the right side of that history. They think it is important for their overall global brand to be on the right side of that history. And I know some people have taken issue with the sacrifice everything. And people have made the facile comparison of, oh, you really want to talk about sacrificing everything. What about our soldiers who sacrificed life and limb? Listen, I think that is a very unfair standard to hold any of us to. If any of us, if people have bad things happen to them or injuries or whatever, and by the standard of did you die in a war, then all of us are going to fall short. But to Chris's point, he did sacrifice his career. He did sacrifice, I don't know what Nike's paying him. It's not the money he'd be making as an NFL quarterback. There's no question about it. So he did not only sacrifice money, he sacrificed the joy of playing football, and he did that for what he believes to be the greater good of helping out people who need it. And I have tremendous respect for that. And I have, listen, Nike is not a perfect company. Everybody knows that, and none of these shoe companies are. But I have respect for them going out on a limb here with Colin Kaepernick on their 30th anniversary.
And I hope he's able to accomplish everything that he wants to accomplish. But the one thing that, Nick, you always ask me, you say, Chris, man, going back on it, like, would you change certain things in your career? And I tell you, there's certain things that I had to do. Of course, I'd like to change them, but where I ended up, I'd have to go through them. But the joy that I have as someone who exhausted everything playing football. Like, I have no desire to play football. When I watch football, I don't think I should be out there. And I have a lot of my friends, they don't have that, because they wish they would have done things a different way. They wish they could have played longer. Nike won't be able to replace that, because he'll always have that I wish I could have played some more football. So I don't get caught up into what the movement is and what he's trying to. I still see the kid that when he's an older man, they're still not going to be able to get that hunger to be able to say, man, I wonder how good I could have been at playing that game that I love.
But he does now have an incredibly powerful platform. If it took a little bit of a backseat in the last 6 months or 8 months or so, and I think we discussed this morning, a lot of people didn't realize he was still working with Nike. Nike has put him back on the national stage now where he could do, and yes, he probably will never play football again, but he could do a lot of good because he has the proverbial microphone in his face once again.
I think I personally think he is doing a lot of good. I think the things he's doing with the Know Your Rights campaigns, with meeting with young people, putting his money where his mouth is when he said he was going to donate that $1 million, which, by the way, he committed to donating before he knew he was done making NFL money, and he continued, followed through on the donation after he was done making NFL money. I think he is doing a lot of good. I also think that him talking about it might satisfy a lot of us, but I don't think people's minds are getting changed on this. We've talked about this for almost 2 years, and people have decided what the facts are going to be, whether those facts are accurate or not, and they've decided where they stand. And I'm yet to meet someone that come up to me and say, you know what, you changed my mind on Colin Kaepernick.
Sure.
That one, that person, I'd love to meet that person. That person I'm yet to meet.
All right, we'll take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Stay with us. Back here on First Things First with Super Bowl champ Chris Caney. Chris, football's here.
Football is here.
Finally.
48 hours.
You woke up in a good mood, Tate.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Plus, I had a pretty good holiday weekend. So
that too.
You know, long weekend, 3-day weekend. Got away for a little bit.
Nice.
A little sun and fun.
Good stuff.
The whole itinerary.
Tell us more.
That's
break
enough.
It out.
We've
okay, we're
enough.
Good. Thank you.
Wow. Okay. No, really? Really?
You're messing me off the air.
A little bit of shade.
Eat that, Canny.
In a move that surprised just about no one, the Jets announced Sam Darnold to be their starting quarterback. Darnold will be the youngest QB to start a season since the merger, beating out 39-year-old Josh McCown for the job. The stage will be big. Monday Night Football, Jets, Lions. Head coach Todd Bowles said that Darnold's kept his head down and he earned the nod through the course of training camp. All right, Chris Caney, what are reasonable expectations for Sam Darnold in his debut now?
I think we got to start with what we can expect from the Detroit Lions, and Matt Patricia is a defensive guy at heart.
Oh, yeah?
You know, he's going to throw everything in his playbook at the young quarterback to see if he has an understanding and command of the offense. But with that being said, I think Jeremy Bates can go a long way to helping his young quarterback get a great start to his pro career. Being able to script the first 15, you know, West Coast offense coordinators, they love to be able to do that, give Sam Darnold opportunity to see some of the things that he's going to see on Monday night during this course of practice during the week, and then also just understanding the little things that can help him when facing defenses, right? Sprinkling in a little bit of up-tempo to standardize the looks, especially on second and third and long, so your quarterback is not having to deal with those exotic blitzes. And then, of course, through your schemes and formation, being able to give him a clean picture of what the defense is doing, especially the coverage on the back end, making sure that those guys have to declare so Sam Darnold can work half a field and know where he wants to go with the football. I think that's what Jeremy Bates and the offensive staff for the Jets will do. And because of that, I think Sam Darnold will have a lot of success in his first regular season game.
I think he gets a couple breaks because of where they play and when they play. I believe he gets a break because Matt Patricia, the Detroit defense has struggled over the years. They do have Darius Slay. People don't know about him. He's one of the best corners. So they will probably play a lot of in-your-face against the Jets wide receivers. But I believe playing on Monday night's a huge advantage for the rookie. He's able to watch Thursday night, and then he's able to watch a full slate of games on Sunday. And he's going to see, you know something? That was not the same speed of the games in these preseason games. So I think in sitting around and watching, as a young player, you're able to see what's going on. There's going to be some train wrecks. There's going to be some quarterbacks that can't stop their team from being in a car accident. So I think that will help him. That first Monday night game at 6 o'clock in Detroit, there shouldn't be a whole bunch of overwhelming crowd noise. There's a lot tougher places he could be playing in week number one going against a rookie coach. I believe they add to the rookie being successful in week number one, Nick.
And here's the thing for the Jets. We can't talk about how weak the AFC is repeatedly and then look at the Jets, who has a 5-win team last year, which isn't good, but it's not 2 or 3 wins. Theoretically, are going to be better at quarterback, theoretically going to be better defensively, and just say, okay, the year's meaningless. Like, just throw it out. No, they go into this year saying, hey, could we get to 500? Would being at 500 be enough to be in the wild card picture in the AFC late in the season? And so what does that mean we need to see from Sam Darnold? I think it's fair to say they need to open up the playbook a little more than what they did in the preseason. In the preseason, to me, they were trying to protect the decision they knew they wanted to make.
Yeah, I'd be careful about the preseason, because what they're going to do with the guy to make him successful. Every preseason game I watched, I thought the quarterbacks, I mean, from veteran quarterbacks to him, to saying, wow, this is very, very vanilla. So I think that he's getting banged on because people think, wow, they gave him a bunch of easy throws. If you see the touchdown he threw to Terrell Pryor, they had coverage on him in the end zone. He comes down to the number three receiver. So watch just trying to put it on the young guy, because from Tom Brady on down to Darnold, besides Baker Mayfield, besides that, all the preseason is very, very vanilla. But because he's a rookie, we just say, oh, Jeremy Bates and them, they didn't do him right in the preseason.
Well, I guess that's really...
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. Because I watched the Jets games are on locally, so you're able to see them in their entirety, unlike all the other preseason games. And it felt to me even more so than Tom Brady, or certainly the other rookies, that it was high completion percentage, low yards per catch repeatedly with him. And the reason... And maybe you're right that was more thematic throughout the entire preseason. I just wasn't seeing all of it. Mm-hmm. The point that I'm making is I think they are going to have to take at least a few more chances in the regular season than we saw in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Because they can't look at this year just as a Sam Darnold development year. They should look at this year as how good can we be until we find out we can't be good enough. Like, I don't think it's smart for any team, particularly a team in the AFC East. They might be the second-best team in this division.
I think they should be considered the second-best team in this division.
Right, and so if that's the case, then we can't look at the Jets through the prism of, all right, it's just about development. It's also about winning games. And when you drew the NFC North, and your first game of the year is against theoretically the weakest team in the NFC North, particularly now that Chicago has Khalil Mack, you have to look at this game as a big opportunity. At least to me, if I'm the Jets, I'm looking at this game not just how will Sam Darnold's debut go, but this is an opportunity to get to 1-0, an opportunity to start our year off well before we get Miami, a divisional team, winless Cleveland. Like, have a chance to start our year off well and see if this can be one of those years. Like, what was Mark Sanchez's rookie year? He didn't play well, and they made a deep playoff run.
Yeah,
like, I'm not assigning that to them, but I don't think they should disqualify it before the year begins.
No, I completely agree with you, and they're not just going to give Todd Bowles another throwaway year. Remember, ownership last year said he was going to judge the coaching staff based on the progression of the young players, but you can't justify a coach's job security if he has three consecutive seasons where he's 5-11 or worse. So they have to stack wins. They got to get wins in this season, but I have to look at this and say, okay, you have to try to win the games that you have when you're facing inferior competition. And I know there ain't no Alabama States on an NFL schedule, CC, but if you look at it on paper, the Jets schedule on the front end of this season is a lot easier than the back half. So you have to take advantage of those opportunities. And with a young quarterback, you have to take advantage of the physical skill sets that he brings to the table. So we know Sam Darnold has the athleticism and arm talent. Maybe you consider some things like moving the pocket and then being able to change the launch point and then give him some extra time to push the ball down the field. But I think a lot of his success early will depend on the offensive coordinator, Jeremy Bates, putting him in situations where he can have success.
Is there anything that sticks out to either one of you guys that the Jets can exploit for the rookie on the other side of the ball in Matt Patricia? His first game as an NFL head coach, are there any certain things there that jump out to you? Like, this is a place where the Jets can generate an advantage because we're up against a rookie head coach?
Any Bill Belichick coach defense, it's not about being a rookie. They always struggle as far as their linebackers covering running backs or tight ends. So I'm going to get either my tight end or my running backs involved in the passing game because it doesn't go well for their combination coverages they like to play. So I'm going to get Sam Darnold. I'm going to get him some looks throwing the ball to my running backs, hoping that those linebackers are not going to be able to cover them. That's the way I go against any Bill Belichick disciple, if that's Mike Vrabel, there being in Tennessee or any of the other coaches.
All right, Chris, stick around. Thanks. Coming up, are the Eagles being too cautious with Carson Wentz? That's next on First Things First. All offseason long, the Eagles floated the fact that Carson Wentz could be ready to go. week one of the regular season. But as of yesterday, Wentz, still coming back from that ACL tear, was still not cleared for contact. So it's going to be Nick Foles starting the season off for the Philadelphia Eagles as they open up against the Falcons on Thursday. Philly head coach Doug Peterson said he's confident in Foles and that this move protects Wentz for the next 10 years. Chris Kenny, how vulnerable are the Eagles without Carson Wentz Thursday night?
Well, I think they're vulnerable just because they're playing against a really good team. I picked the Atlanta Falcons as a dark horse team to get to the Super Bowl out of the NFC, and that conference is stacked. So I look at the Falcons and the challenges that they present for that Eagles offense, and you saw it in the divisional round. Philly had a tough time pushing the ball down the field in passes that traveled over 20 yards in the air. Nick Foles was 0-for in that game. So Doug Peterson, they went with a lot of those RPOs to try to get him comfortable because it was a playoff game, and they realized that the strength of that team is on the offensive and defensive lines, and those groups are going to have to come to play when the thing kicks off on Thursday night in Philly.
I'm concerned about Nick Foles, because you were right. The reason why we picked Minnesota in the NFC Championship game, because the lack of a deep threat. Now, we thought with them struggling against the Falcons defense, man, they're definitely not going to be able to handle the Vikings defense that has an all-pro on every level. But that's when he went, Nick Foles,
what a 2.0,
yeah, right? Yeah. Third down in the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. He was 21 of 25.
That's 84%.
Four touchdowns, a perfect quarterback rating of 158.3. So when we talk about are they vulnerable, is that guy going to show up? Or the guy that we saw in a couple regular season starts,
and
the guy that
pre-season.
We saw in the divisional round. So for me, as a coach, what am I going to do? I'm going right back to the RPOs and run the ball. You got Jason Peters back to nail down the left side mm-hmm. of that offensive line. I don't believe that the Atlanta is worth can withstand a steady 30 carries of Philadelphia running the ball. They got good big people. Utilize them in this game and have your defense get after Matty Ice. I believe that's the way you're able to help Nick Foles. Don't fall in love with the last two games. Please don't throw the ball 35 times. Let's run the ball. Mm-hmm. Let's run the ball 60% of the time. Yep. Throw it 35 to 45% of the time. I believe that's how they get the win on Thursday night, Nick.
Going into this year, I expect Philly to be a little worse than they were last year. That's with Wentz, because no team is going to duplicate what they did on third down last year. They had tremendous fumble luck last year. Certain of these outlier things. They had terrible health, right? And so we expect them to be better there. I think Atlanta, in year two of Steve Sarkisian, should be better. They added another wide receiver in Calvin Ridley. Julio Jones isn't going to have three touchdowns on the season. So I look at these two teams at full strength as about even money. And now one team's dealing with Nick Foles, the other team has Matt Ryan. Now what neutralizes that to a degree is the game's in Philly, not only in Philly, but a night game, your first game since the Super Bowl. Like, if you're ever going to have a jacked up regular season crowd, it's the night they unveil the banner. And we've been in that stadium. You used to play in, well, not that stadium, but that city. And you and I were there for the NFC Championship.
It's going to be lit Thursday.
Yeah, it is.
But you called Atlanta a dark horse contender. I think that almost disrespects where they're at. Like, I don't think they are a dark horse at all. I think they're one of the six best teams in the NFL going
into
the season.
Has anybody been talking about the Falcons winning a Super Bowl this year?
Right,
that's my point.
In regards to that, sure. They're not being discussed maybe the way they should be. I think this is an excellent team. I think Philly has almost as tough as a home week one game as you can have, given what the Falcons can do offensively and given how limited, again, maybe I'm going to look silly again, but I'm going to need more than seven brilliant quarters from Nick Foles to go into a game and not think a team quarterback by Nick Foles is going to be at least somewhat limited.
Isn't this exactly the conversation we had last year going into those two games? The same one. How in the world is this guy going to be?
But here's what's important, Jenna. It is the same one. And you can argue that with a slightly better play call on first, second, third, or fourth and goal with a minute left in the divisional game, that Atlanta wins.
That's what people forget.
And then
you don't see the brilliance.
That never happened. We talk about Wentz's injury ended their season, and that people do not look at Philly the way they do now. Now, Philly earned it. They had a goal line stand, and then they played brilliant football games in back-to-back weeks. But the margins between these two teams were this thin last year in this same stadium.
But what was the difference? It was the big people, right? The offensive and defensive lines. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Philadelphia's offensive line going up against the defensive front of the Atlanta Falcons, those aren't a lot of big guys on that Falcons defensive front. So Philadelphia needs to lean on those guys. And to your point, CC, run the ball 25, 30 times a game. And guess what else that does? That keeps that high-powered Atlanta Falcons offense on the sidelines. Can't score a lot of points from the bench if you're Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and company. So that's why you have to use what's in your advantage, which is that offensive line. Allow that to be the equalizer, control the game. They won time of possession in the divisional round. They're going to have to do that again, hold the ball 32, 33, 34 minutes in that game. That's how they win on Thursday night.
Chris, were you surprised that Carson Wentz wasn't ready for week one? Because all signs all season long from this entire preseason was that he was going to be ready to go.
No, Jenna, you got to look at the timeline. He tore his ACL in December. We're in September. I mean, it's 9 months. And granted, you look at it and you say, if all things break right, he could potentially be ready for week one. But when you have your backup quarterback as Super Bowl MVP, there's no reason to rush. If you're Doug Peterson or the medical staff from the Eagles, you don't have to clear him right now. You have a capable backup in Nick Foles, but he hasn't looked good in the preseason. A lot of turnovers. The first-string offense hasn't produced a lot of points. So you are a little bit concerned because things have been sloppy. But I have confidence in a veteran quarterback and a group that's been there and done that before at the highest level.
Yeah, Jenna, I'm surprised. I'm surprised Carson Wentz is not the game one starter. I thought when they tried him out there the first day of training camp, that's a tremendous sign. And there was no type of setback. Now, we don't have all the information that the doctors have, but from what I've seen through NFL and covering the NFL and playing NFL for 30 years, a guy being there the first day of training camp, he is going to be there unless there's a setback week number one.
And Coach Mangini can say all he wants, and I'm not trying to speak bad of our friend when he's not here, that NFL teams don't look at the schedule. I disagree. The Philadelphia Eagles know that after Atlanta, they have two of their easiest games, theoretically, of the year. And after week three, they have their toughest five-game stretch of the season. And if they know, okay, maybe Wentz can play, but it puts his long-term health slightly in danger. Plus, how much better is Wentz in his first game back off injury, if we rush him, going to be than Nick Foles? Plus, we can give him an extra 2 weeks for all those reasons before the really brutal part of our schedule comes up. For all those reasons, I think they're being extra cautious, because I agree with Chris Canning might not have been surprised. I'm very surprised. When they said he's not on the pup list to start training camp, I thought that meant he'd be on the field to start week one.
All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up on the other side, why is Bill Belichick worried about week one? Hear it from him next on First Things First. First Things First, sponsored by DraftKings. Play the free DraftKings team pick'em to win your share of $1 million. Getting excited.
Absolutely.
Right?
I already gave out some picks. Give out some more tomorrow.
We'll get to Tom Brady in a second, but first, week one of college football. Great catch from Texas Tech's T.J. Vasher, see?
Oh, T.J., I got to give it up for you on this one. Great grab. Not on the level of OBJ, because you brought your little left hand in there to secure it to the ground, but great job. That's good on any level. College, pro,
that's good.
Body
that's good
in,
the pros. Yep.
One body part in, that's catch.
Exactly right. One piece of your butt's as good as 2 feet in the pros. You only need 1 foot in college. What, Jenna? That's the rules. It's in the rule book. That's how it's written.
Did you say butt?
Yeah. He's landed
on
his...
One piece of your butt?
Yeah,
just the way the coaches teach it right here. VMI versus Toledo.
Watch closely. This will happen quick. The shortest punt return ever. Toledo won.
The coach says, take it right off of his foot. What do you mean, coach? No, dive in front of... No, take it literally right off of his foot. That's what Toledo does here. Amazing.
Perfectly timed.
I mean, it's perfectly done. Perfectly done. This is...
Texas, Maryland, Devin DuVernay uses every inch of his body to make a great touchdown catch.
One of the few plays Texas was able to make in this game, losing to Big Ten's Maryland Terrapins to start the season. Not a good look for the Longhorns, Nick.
Man, Maryland, I think, is 2-22 in their last 24 games against ranked opponents. Those two wins against Tom Herman's Longhorns this year and against Tom Herman's Longhorns last year. A little inauspicious start in Austin for Coach Herman.
Finally, Syracuse, Western Michigan, Jamal Custis with a nice one-handed grab burns the defense to get into the end zone.
We played some football on the Cuse this year, see? Eat that. Oh, and two of you guys, no, we still getting six?
Yeah, my quarterback, can you lead my man out here? Because I don't want to do nothing nasty like this. Jamal, nice catch here. Good little move, planting it in the end zone, making your quarterback look good. That was all you.
Syracuse and Ohio State, both 1-0. I see no difference between the two programs.
Moving on to the New England Patriots. They'll face the Texans in their season opener on Sunday. Tom Brady and his ragtag group of wide receivers will face off against J.J. Watt and that star-studded Houston defense. Bill Belichick expanded, using as few words as possible, on his difficult Week 1 opponent.
It's just a very challenging situation for us, any team that plays them, but in this case, this week, us. Be able to not only handle the players where they traditionally line up, but when he creates schemes that moves them or puts them in places that to attack our offense, that makes it even a little bit more challenging.
See, we know that Bill Belichick takes, we know this from Mangini, Bill Belichick takes every opponent very seriously, but he seems to be very concerned about this Texans defense.
He should be. If you look at the offensive line, the way it's unsettled in New England, and Mangini has pointed out that I'm not going to worry about the offensive line because Dante Scarnecchia, the great coach, he's there. Well, let me tell you, for the first month of the season, you better be concerned. And Houston, what they present, not only from a power standpoint, because if they line J.J. Watt up inside, put him on the same side as Jadeveon Clowney, that's a problem. If they line him opposite of Jadeveon Clowney, you have to double team one of them. You can't double team both of them. So the number count, New England does not like to help their offensive line. So there's extra pressure on Brady. With this wide receiving core that he hadn't spent a whole bunch of time with chemistry, he's got to get the ball out of his hand. And they're going to throw the ball to the running backs more so. I believe they'll target them besides Gronk more than they will the wide receivers. So that's what they'll do to alleviate the pressure. But there's real problems in a matchup when the front seven of the Houston Texans, what they can do to the New England Patriots.
Listen, we speculate all offseason. What could be an issue? Where are their weaknesses? Where are the Patriots not as good as last year? And the Pats don't like to give us any information. But they got no choice but to give the whole world information when they make their cuts and when they set their roster. And when you have all these wide receivers in town, and of all the guys you've had with you throughout offseason, preseason, training camp, you keep four of them. And you end up claiming a wide receiver that Seattle released. They don't got no great wide receiver core there. You claim a receiver that the Jets released, who, if you don't know Chad Hansen, close your eyes. Imagine a Pats wide receiver. That's Chad Hansen. So you pick two wide receivers from the Seahawks and Jets. We've talked about, oh, they got issues at the offensive line. NFL teams will go into a season with a minimum of eight, usually nine offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Pats kept seven. So they know they got to add someone from somewhere else or their own practice squad. And by the way, their starting left tackle, Trent Brown, didn't practice yesterday. So we thought wide receiver and offensive line were going to be issues. They told us they were issues in how they constructed their roster. And so Trent Brown, who's your most established player on the left side of your line, or the most established guy who can play left tackle for you because it's either him or Lage or in Waddle, he's going to be going up against Clowney or Watt or Clowney and Merciless or Watt and Merciless. This is not an ideal front seven to be playing when you have a hodgepodge offensive line. And we showed you in those highlights. This team last year without Watt got after Tom Brady, got after him, put him down multiple times. And that's the one X factor for the Pats is if Brady comes out of this game dead.
And I don't think people understand as far as the coverage people. The Texans have added Tyrann Mathieu there. He's mm-hmm. going to be a safety there, him and Kareem Jackson. So they should be better securing the secondary. And let's not forget who the quarterback of the Texans is. There's problems there, too. He was talking about J.J. Watt and them, but in the back of his mind, he's talking about Deshaun Watson, his ability to throw the ball deep, especially how bad the Pats were last year against the deep pass. So not only their defensive front presents problems, this is a talented, talented roster. I believe there's going to be a couple upsets in week number one, and I wouldn't be surprised if this was one of them in New England.
Let me not be the voice of reason, but be the voice of the Patriot fan who will say, But this is what the Patriots do. Your garbage is our, what's the expression?
Your trash is our treasure.
You know, we just need the prototypical wide receiver. And
usually that, not instantly.
When was the last time, though, that we said that they're deficient in one area and they actually went into the season and proved us right, that they have been deficient? Bill Belichick, doesn't he
always somehow find a way? I thought the first month of last season, that's what it looked like. Now, by the second, third, and fourth months, they looked fine.
Sure.
But another player they added, Aaron Cole, from Jacksonville, one of the best nickel corners in football, who's going to be playing probably their slot cornerback position, which is where we know the Patriots like to do a lot of work. Pats don't typically, though, go into a season with Edelman suspended. Last year they went to him with him injured, but not suspended. They had Brandon Cooks. Like, the talent...
It's totally different. And Belichick, he's not going to be honest. He's concerned about the offensive line. How do I know that? He only kept seven. Then he claimed two guys off waivers that will not be effective for at least a couple weeks. Like, those two guys aren't available this week to play against the Texans, and claiming these other wide receivers. That lets me know that he's not happy with his roster and getting guys who are not accomplished players. So don't just give it to Belichick wash like, oh, everything's going to be okay. They're going to struggle. It's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Willies and the Joes. And you need some talent. Belichick needs some talent. And right now, they don't have a lot at the offensive line, and they don't have a lot at the wide receiver.
And let's not forget, these two teams played at the beginning of the season last year, right after Deshaun Watson got placed in the lineup, and Watson lit them up. The Texans had a four-point lead or a five-point lead late, and then as often is the case in Houston, Bill O'Brien mangled the clock down the stretch. Tom Brady got one final shot at it, and he found Brandon Cooks, who's no longer on the team, in the front corner of the end zone for a touchdown with less than a minute left. Like, this team was very close last year, and I don't think this Pats team right now is as good as they were last year.
I have faith in you, Belichick. Yeah. Don't worry.
Smart bet.
All my bets are. Mm-hmm. Take a break. Coming up, can Zeke lead the Cowboys back to the playoffs this season? Next on First Things First. This Saturday, we've got three big games on Fox. First, UCLA battles Oklahoma. Then Iowa State takes on Iowa, followed by USC facing Heisman hopeful Bryce Love and Stanford. It all starts at 12:30 Eastern on Fox, or watch live on the Fox Sports app.
Oklahoma looked outstanding this weekend against an FAU team that would have been ranked 29th if the AP rankings went that high. That was a dominant win by Oklahoma.
Yeah, quarterback Murray looked good.
Now time for say what? Over the weekend, Alabama put the beat down on Louisville in their season opener, winning 51-14. However, Nick Saban had some spicy comments after the game when he was asked about Bama's quarterback situation. Say what?
I think both guys are good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. So quit asking.
So we should mention that Saban later went ahead and apologized to the reporter.
Privately.
He sent her a note and said he was sorry. He was just tired of being asked about it multiple times.
Even but he wasn't asked was just, about it. He wasn't asked who was going to be the starter. Listen, there's no defending Saban here. There's not. The guy, listen, he's maybe the greatest college football coach ever. He's a jerk to people that he doesn't need to be. And Maria Taylor doesn't work for him.
And she was just doing her job.
And she didn't say, who's your week 2 starter, coach? I would understand being a little frustrated if right after a win you're like, who's going to start next week?
No.
She just asked him, what do you think of your quarterback play today?
And the reason why she asked that question was based on the decisions or his inability to say who the starter was going to be. She was doing her job, and Nick Saban does this several times a year. He jumps on a reporter. Don't do it, not typically nationally, but he does this to local reporters all the time. Jump, big bad Bart gonna bite their head off. Nick, calm down. Stop taking yourself so serious. If you stop milking your quarterback situation and give us a real answer that you're not going to start Jalen and you're going to keep him on the roster because it's what's best for you and what's not best for the kids. Tell him the truth, Nick, because that's the truth.
Right. It ends all discussion. This is a problem he created. You don't get to have it both ways. You don't get to always have, I want to have both quarterbacks. Okay, that's a benefit to you. And I want no one to ever ask me about quarterbacks again. In fact, we're going to act like there's not the quarterback
position
in football.
Jalen was disappointed that Saban hadn't talked to him about it. Now, he deserves at least a conversation. Nick don't want to talk to no one about it. Man, come on, man.
And I'm a believer in if you're going to publicly try to embarrass someone, you should publicly apologize. I know that he privately sent her a note. Okay, that's one thing. He's on national television a lot. I don't know Maria Taylor, but I don't listen.
You know, Doug Peterson also got into the same sort of situation this past week when asked in a media session about who he was going to start, and he got very chippy and very snappy.
It was at a press conference. He was repeatedly asked the same question, and he did not, to me, single out one person. He said, guys, I'm not, you guys can ask me however many ways you want. I'm not going to answer it. It was, why are you angry all the time? Make $9 million a year, the greatest maybe ever in the history of your profession. You just got a big win over Louisville. Smile, man.
Nick's advice, just smile more. Time for stories to start your morning. The Niners got some bad news over the weekend. One of their key off-season acquisitions, running back Jerick McKinnon, is out for the year with a torn ACL. See, how do you think this is going to impact the Niners' offense?
That was their big pickup this offseason. It's going to affect their quarterback more so than anyone else. Jimmy Garoppolo and his inability to be able to get the ball out of his hand to top-flight receivers, he's their best wide receiver as a running back.
And that is an underrated part of his game. I think it's one of the reasons they
committed.
That's
the strongest part of his game.
Right.
They didn't sign him to run between the tackles.
Right, but I think people that maybe weren't watching a lot of Vikings last year didn't know that. And so I think people were surprised at the amount of money he got this offseason in a depressed running back market. It's because they look at him as kind of a poor man's dual threat, like a not Le'Veon Bell or Todd Gurley, but the type of person that can bring both aspects to your game. And this is one of the many, I mean, prior to this injury, I was bearish rather than bullish on San Francisco. Jimmy G has about as few weapons as any quarterback in the league going into this season. This was going to be one of his biggest weapons. It's a big loss.
All right, moving on to the Raiders now. Rosters were cut down to 53 this weekend. Oakland raised some eyebrows when they cut wideout Martavis Bryant. Remember, the Raiders traded a third-round pick in April for Bryant. Nick, what do you make of the move?
I mean, it makes the trade, which was one of the first moves made under the Gruden regime, all the more ridiculous. We thought they paid a high price for a player who was potentially facing a suspension or one suspension away from maybe being out of football forever. They thought it was a big price at the time. And the Raiders are in an odd place, see? They are rebuilding, clearly, while being the oldest team in at least a half decade in the NFL. That's not usually where you want to be.
Gruden's team looks like my fantasy football team when I retired from the league. I wanted to pick a bunch of my buddies, all of them being old like myself. That's what his team looks like. You should have eyeballs on Oakland. This is a bad decision to trade for a guy, a third-round pick, who had been suspended not once, but twice, and the second time for a year.
All right, the Bills open up the season Sunday on the road in Baltimore, and second-year quarterback Nathan Peterman will be starting under center. This after Buffalo traded A.J. McCarron to the Raiders after signing him this past offseason. It was enough to get a guffaw out of Nick Wright. See, what do you make of the Bills' decision to start Peterman over Josh Allen?
I like this because the fact that Nathan Peterman played better than any of the other quarterbacks. A.J. McCarron, they should. If you trade him, man, give him away. Whatever. If you can get something for him, I was shocked that the Raiders would even trade for A.J. He was not good. You're talking about the worst offensive line in the NFL. Peterman was a better quarterback than Josh. Don't compound the mistake by putting a rookie in there.
I imagine the Bills are going to be in contention for the number one overall pick of the draft this year. But I think Peterman was their best option. I will give them credit for this. They signed A.J. McCarron, and they were able to recoup a draft pick for him, so they essentially just paid whatever his guaranteed money was, I think $4 million, for a fifth-round pick. It's a high price for a fifth-round pick, but they got something back for him. But this was, amazingly, their best quarterback option.
Finally, we have Saquon Barkley. The rookie running back says he is ready for a full workload in week one. He hasn't played since injuring his hamstring in the first preseason game. Now he gets to face a tough Jaguars defense. Ooh. All right, Chris, how hard will Saquon's debut be against the Jaguars?
Oh, it's going to be hard. I mean, you're talking about one of the defenses that if there are five defenses I wouldn't want to face week number one as a running back, it would be Jacksonville. And it's not just because they're a good defense. They're good against the pass, and they're good against the run. And they also, they're one of the few teams that can match up with Odell with Jalen Ramsey. So they can commit people to the run and still negate a big game by your big play guy. So to me, it's how patient is Eli? How many chances is he going to take throwing the ball to Odell against Jalen matched up a one-on-one? So they're going to be able to put a lot of people in the box. So the question is, Shepard, Ingram, do these guys step up? And will Eli get off of this number one receiver and get to number two and three quick? And they're going to be putting pressure. Ereck Flowers, is he still the same Ereck Flowers that we saw in year one and in year two? Because if he is, Jacksonville will take advantage of it. This is one of the better games of the week, number one schedule. Looking forward to seeing it.
I'm super excited for this game. C, I think, made, not surprisingly, the very best point and a point that could be underrated by some, which is the vast majority of teams, in fact, maybe every team on the Giants' schedule, except for Jacksonville, is going to go in a game plan, going to go into a game planning, we're going to double Odell almost every play. We're going to have safety help the majority of the time. Jacksonville can say, we do not need to do that. We can trust Jalen for at least part of the game one-on-one. So Jacksonville's the one team or one of few teams that can dedicate that extra man to the box, which can hurt Saquon Barkley. This is, if you were to tell me, what is the worst possible team to have your first NFL game for Saquon Barkley? I think I'd pick Jacksonville, where Calais Campbell could potentially wreck Ereck Flowers, where they have that part of the offensive line being crushed in repeatedly. You're not bullish on Nate Solder as a run blocker against anyone, much less against Malik Jackson and the Jacksonville front, with Calais probably going to be on the right side or on the left side, but still. It'd be interesting to see his transition from dominating the Big Ten to going up against the league's best defense. Now, I still think the Giants have as good of weaponry as any team in the league, but they are playing a team that was clearly the best defense in the AFC last year, and they had the Vikings flip a coin for who was the best overall defense. And aside from losing Aaron Colvin, their nickel corner, they're bringing nearly everybody back. And Jacksonville's not an old defense. These are young guys. Jalen theoretically should be better this year. Calais Campbell almost won Defensive Player of the Year last year. So, I mean, work cut out for him enormously.
All right, that's the Giants situation. Sticking to the NFC East, the Dallas Cowboys, they open the season against the Panthers on Sunday. The dynamic combo of Dak and Zeke enter that pivotal year three. Cowboys hoping they can help the team bounce back from a 9-7 season last year. The Dallas Morning News had Ezekiel Elliott ranked as the most crucial player to the Cowboys' success this season, with Dak coming in the number two spot. See, you think they're right? Is Zeke the most crucial player on this Dallas Cowboys roster?
He is critical. He is critical to the Dallas Cowboys because the investment that you made and the resource you put into your offensive line, he's making sure that you get paid out on those investments because you're able to dominate. You're able to play a style. But for me, the most important player is Dak Prescott. And the reason why, because if he gets hurt, you're going to become familiar with the guy by the name of Cooper Rush. And no one in Dallas is in a rush to do that. So for me, they have a more competent backup in Rod Smith. If Zeke was out, Rod Smith, former Buckeye, he could rush for 1,000 yards. He is a banger. He is a big-time talent. So the drop-off from Zeke to him, yeah, it's a drop-off. But the drop-off from Dak to Rush, oh, man, it's not something that you want to see. So I respect the list. Yes, Zeke is very, very valuable based on that offensive line. But if Dak is not the quarterback, oh, they can't win 10 games.
They can't. Listen, the Cowboys are the bizarro Eagles, where you take their quarterback away, they're screwed. Take their running back away, they're screwed. How about their left tackle? Like Tyron Smith, if you look at the games he's missed, he actually has had a bigger impact on their overall offensive productivity than Zeke has. I know they went 3-3 in Zeke's absence last year, but they were able to duplicate about 80%, 85% of his rushing totals in those games without him. I think Zeke's the best player on the team, but it's very difficult for a running back to be the most important guy on a team. He's clearly the best player on their roster, but I've seen the Cowboys fall off a cliff more without Sean Lee. Like, this is a team because of cap mismanagement in years past. I mean, they're paying Tony Romo $9 million this year, or he's counting $9 million this year against their cap. Like, because of cap mismanagement in years past, they are a one-deep football team. And so, yeah, they can't deal with the Zeke injury, but C's pointing out Cooper Rush or Tyron Smith or Sean Lee. We'll see how they do without Travis Frederick to start the year as well.
We spent so much time talking about the difference between years one and two with Dak Prescott. Let's talk about going into this year. If all things are equal and he has that line to protect him, I mean, which is the Dak that you think we might see?
Well, number one is he's not going to have that offensive line. So he is going to have to improve not only from his decision making, but also from his leadership. His work before the snap increased. When you have Travis Frederick, the best, not
the Cowboys
center.
Are keeping, by the way.
Yeah. He's keeping him on the roster, but he's not going to play.
Right.
So his workload, it increased. Now, you're not going to see it. It's going to be like the duck on the pond. But up under the water, he's going to be treading. He's going to have to be able to call out more line fronts. He's going to have to call out more coverages. And also, the right guard, who also is the best at his position. He's not 100%. So we can't say, well, the offensive line intact. They're not going to be intact. So his workload is going to go up. Does he feel that pressure, or is he ready to graduate and to be able to assume that like other franchise quarterbacks do, Nick?
And what those other franchise quarterbacks, at least in today's NFL, have going for them, which Dak doesn't, as again, and this will circle back to the years past cap mismanagement, is those teams have in their early years said, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that. Look, I mean, pick the quarterback, Carson Wentz. How many players they had last year, this offseason, to help him out? We just saw Mitch Trubisky. Oh, okay, you're year two. We're going to sign Allen Robinson. We're going to go get Trey Burton. How about Khalil Mack to help out the defense? How's that work for you? I mean, we Jared Goff. We're going to bring in everybody.
Everybody
you could possibly want. Pat Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, would you like him? With Deshaun Watson, Nuke Hopkins, we'll make sure he's here forever. We'll give him a long-term deal, and they've already spent their money on Merciless and Watt. We'll also bring in Tyron Matthew and Aaron Colvin. Why didn't the Cowboys do that when their quarterback's only making $800,000 and those other quarterbacks, while cheaper, making $6 to $8 million? Oh, because they can't. Because they have the dead money from Dez and the dead money from Witten and the dead money from Romo. And they actually had to, they gave all these linemen these huge deals, and they actually had to rework those deals to make them more cap friendly now, which means you're going to have to pay that piper later. Like, so we're going to focus on Dak and we're going to hammer him in the head if they're not good. But the reality is that the Cowboys for years, bless you,
thank you,
did not handle the salary cap right. They paid guys for production they did not get. They gave them guaranteed money. And then when that bill was due, they said, let me owe you.
Yes.
And so even this year, you're like, oh, well, next year they've got this cap space coming open. Yeah, but you're going to keep DeMarcus Lawrence. Are you going to keep Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott when they will be coming up on new deals? Like, that cap money that they have coming open, they're going to spend on retaining their own players. This is something that they never did a full cleansing of the cap, and that's why all the other young quarterbacks got these nice toys.
Right.
And Dak's got Cole Beasley.
Love Cole Beasley. Don't shade on Cole Beasley.
Just don't shade on Cole. You were close. That's your first swing and miss of the day.
That wasn't a miss.
You don't shade on someone unless you're an awning.
I did. So, and I am. Coming up, did the Raiders get enough for Khalil Mack? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Canty. Busy weekend for the Raiders. That'll happen when you trade away your best player and one of the league's best players. Raiders sent the former defensive player of the year, Khalil Mack, and a second-round pick to the Bears, essentially for two first-round picks and a Chicago-style pizza. Here's John Gruden on the deal.
The negotiation was what it was. It was tough. It was a long process. We talked about it daily. We made an offer. I don't believe we were anywhere close to where the Bears were. And the Bears made us an offer that we thought was really unique. And very, very tough to say goodbye to a great player. But here we are today.
Chris, do you think the Raiders got enough for Mac?
Well, I think they did as good as they could in terms of getting back draft compensation. And the reason being, Ryan Pace and the Chicago Bears were willing to do what no other team was willing to do, which is give up those two first-round draft picks. And I think that was out of desperation, just looking at where Ryan Pace is. I mean, he's had three full seasons as the general manager.
That's important.
They're 14 and 34. So he's like, you know what? I'm going all in on this team being as successful as possible. I want to justify the decision to move up one spot and draft Mitch Trubisky last year. And what do I always say helps a young quarterback? A dominant defense. The Bears were a top 10 scoring unit last year. Having Khalil Mack makes you a dominant defensive unit, extra possessions, better field position for your young quarterback. This offseason has been all about getting Mitch Trubisky back on track, and Ryan Pace went out and got Matt Nagy from the Kansas City Chiefs to be the head coach. He's an offensive coordinator, an offensive guru. We see what he did with Alex Smith last year, Allen Robinson in free agency, Taylor Gabriel in free agency, drafted Anthony Miller out of Memphis to go along with Trey Burton, the free agent signing for the Eagles. This is all about Mitch Trubisky, and Ryan Pace had to make this move. Because guess what? If he doesn't have success this year, they're probably going to move on from him. So what good is saving those first-round picks anyway?
And as far as their new head coach, Matt Nagy, if for whatever it's worth, you know, a quarter of the league, eight coaches, are some part of the Andy Reid coaching tree. And Andy Reid said recently the coach most ready for success right now of any of his former assistants turned head coaches was Matt Nagy in his first year. So they think they have the right coach in Chicago. We'll see. But the reality is this for Oakland. If you got the most you could possibly get and it still was a bad trade, that means you shouldn't have made the trade. Like, they got the best deal they could have possibly gotten. Nobody was offering this, and we haven't seen two first-round picks traded for a player. It's only a handful of instances. Ricky Williams had happened for, Keyshawn Johnson happened for, Joey Galloway, I think. Not a lot of recent history. And the last time we saw a player of Khalil Mack's stature traded on his rookie contract was Champ Bailey almost 20 years ago. But that's why it's so rare, because the whole point of the draft is to once a decade have a Khalil Mack that you draft, that wants to be with your franchise, that stays there and fills a position of need. And no, he's not a quarterback. He just plays the position that is the single most important in football outside of quarterback. He's not a left guard who wants this money. He's not an inside backer. He's a pass rusher. And they moved on from him. It's interesting Gruden say it was hard to say goodbye to him. I never knew he said hello to him. So I guess it's easier since they didn't really know each other.
I'm going to take this a different way. I'm going to look at it from the other side. Because if the defensive end is as important as the quarterback, if you paid a guy $20 million, would you be happy if your defense was one of the worst in the league? No, you wouldn't. One model we have not seen is we have not seen a franchise in this era in football that paid a quarterback over $20 million and paid any other player on the team $20 million. Now, that's where the Raiders would have been. And now that would have been a disaster waiting to happen. It's just a matter of when that car is going to crash. So it's something we hadn't seen. In their financial model, they didn't have this type of dollars allocated to go out to him. So it was never, they were never going to sign him. The reason why John Gruden, I would believe, didn't get close to the player, didn't communicate a lot with the player, he never thought the player was going to be there. So he never thought there was a need for me to develop some type of long-term relationship, because I don't believe we're going to have the resources. It does not fit our model, given that we gave our quarterback less than 2 years ago a significant contract. Next year, we have to give Amari Cooper between $16 to $18 million as a wide receiver. Those economics in Oakland, I just don't believe they exist for this team going what they're going through with lack of cash for this ownership.
The reason that I take issue with that, C, is they don't have to give Amari Cooper that money. If you're telling me I can keep Amari Cooper or Khalil Mack, I'd rather keep Khalil Mack.
It's not as if you're making one choice, Nick. It's the number of choices that you're going to make. All right. If you decide to pay him $20 million, how good is that defense going to be with him $20
million? Not that much better. You're not going to get the return on investment for putting those kind of resources.
Right. So you're not making a decision between Amari Cooper. You've made a decision when you paid that quarterback. You made a decision. I'm going to try to support him as much as I can. Amari Cooper is a guy they drafted in the first round. They can't let go of both their first round
right.
picks.
No, but that's my point is I would have, if you're telling me I can only keep one, I would have kept the player that to me is more proven and clearly better right now than Amari Cooper is. And you're right that no teams had the model of $20 million quarterback and $20 million other player, but the cap's never been as high as it is.
Yep.
We have seen in Denver, they gave Peyton a boatload of money at the time and Von Miller a boatload of money.
But on a short-term deal. And Denver's a cash rich. They're in the top five every year as far as revenue generated. They've been strong for a long, long
time.
So we're not making the accurate comparison when we compare Peyton Manning on a short deal with a neck, which also the signing bonus and stuff didn't really matter that much as far as them financing that compared to what Oakland, they got real financial problems, and we can't have these discussions unless we acknowledge they're not like all the other teams.
Yes,
Chris.
This was a cash flow decision. They had to move on from Khalil Mack because you knew what it was going to cost to get a contract extension done. And after we saw the numbers on Aaron Donald's contract late last week, you knew that the Oakland Raiders were probably going to do that sooner than later because they paid John Gruden $100 million on a 10-year contract. They paid Derek Carr over $100 million on his contract extension 2 years ago. They've got one of the highest paid offensive lines in the league. So, CC, like you said, their identity is going to be on the offensive side of the ball. That's why they made an organizational decision to move on from Khalil Mack.
Okay, well, if that's the case, if this was always a foregone conclusion, then I have serious question about the timing of it. If this was always a foregone conclusion, then you either, in my eyes, you either do it before this past draft, or you see if you don't care about your long-term relationship with Mac because you're not bringing him back on a long-term deal.
Maybe they didn't know, Nick.
They didn't know that Mac was going to force their hand.
You don't know where Aaron Donald is. The word on the street, like, they were getting close to a deal. The word on the street, that deal, we knew where that deal was going to be. Like, it was going to be the highest pay. They couldn't get there. So it's a matter of timing. We could sit here and go back and forth, back and forth. When you don't have the money, all right, that's a real, real issue.
I guess my only question is, if they didn't have the money, they didn't know they didn't have the money before the draft? They couldn't have done if
they didn't know Khalil Mack was going to force their hand by holding out and having this kind of situation take place. They didn't know that he was going to be as
they didn't know that because potentially they could have had him play this year.
Yeah. Then it's a different conversation next year.
But that's the second point of the timing thing. See, is once the Donald deal comes in, then if I'm a poker player and I'm in Oakland, don't I actually want to see if he's really going to miss games? Like, how rare it is for players. Dwayne Brown did it. He's the only player in Camp Chancellor did it 5 years ago, missed two games. It is super rare.
Why take the chance? You got somebody on the hook, somebody giving you two first rounds. And you know one of those picks, like Chicago this year, like, how good are they going to be?
Yeah.
That's going to be a top 15 pick. Like, that's some serious draft capital that you'd have to walk away from. And you, in talking to the Jets, no one got close to this offer. No. So why take the chance of, is he going to miss games and I can get two first rounders? I got to move on and get them two first rounders.
All right, got a break there. Chris, stick around. Coming up, will sitting out cost L. Bell on the field? That's next on First Things First. The Steelers will open their season in Cleveland today. They hope to have Le'Veon Bell by then, but he's not today.
Sunday,
of course. Then, but he still hasn't shown up for practice or signed his $14.5 million franchise tender. As a result, his bosses are none too happy. Steelers GM Kevin Colbert released the following statement. He said, "We are disappointed Le'Veon Bell has not signed his franchise tender and rejoined his teammates. We will continue to focus on preparing the players on our roster for our regular season opener Sunday against the Browns." All right, see, how big of a deal is it that L. Bell still hasn't signed his franchise tag?
Well, it becomes a bigger deal if he's not there Wednesday. Tuesday, they have an extended game plan in the first week of the season because the preseason ends on Thursday. The cutdown is on Saturday. So you have Sunday and Monday as additional days to put stuff in, window dress it before you actually get the game plan in on Tuesday and install it on Wednesday. So I'm not going to panic right now. They've played this game for a long, long time. I haven't figured it out yet. But for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I just like for them to get on the same page as far as what are they trying to accomplish this year. And typically you'd be saying, like, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. But until you get everyone there, you can't get everyone on the same page. So I'd like to have the head coach, the general manager, and all the stars saying all the same thing. And in Pittsburgh, one of my biggest problems is, man, they got five or different heads of the snake. Every once in a while, this one says something, then this one says something. I got a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. He does his business a little bit different. But I'd like to be able to move on from stuff that has hindered them the last 2 years. And this is something that's hindered them as a distraction, based on my opinion, the last couple years.
And, CC, they could have eliminated this distraction and given Le'Veon Bell the financial security he's looking for, albeit probably not on a long-term deal, because he's a running back. And philosophically, you don't want to pay for production from a running back past his 6 or 7 year, because it's assumed that he's not going to be able to produce at the same levels as earlier in his career. Le'Veon Bell, he's led the league in touches from a skill position player since he came in 2013, the most touches. So this is one of those things where the Steelers are head their bet, saying we'd rather go to year to year with Le'Veon Bell,
right,
so we know when the production falls off, we're not on the hook with that big salary. And especially with the contracts, the way they're structured, those numbers are a lot bigger on the back end. But to me, it's all about what happens this year with this team, because you're trying to compete for a championship. And if it's important to have everybody in and ready to go when the season rolls around, then you should have went ahead and took care of this offseason.
And, Canty, I believe that not only him being a running back, but him being suspended twice plays into them not giving him a long-term deal. So as a running back, how long is he going to be good? He's got more touches than anyone since he came into the league. And, by the way, he happens to be in the program and not suspended once, but suspended twice.
Which means one more strike, and it's a year long at a minimum, which is the big concern, outlier, aside from the general running back wear and tear you allude to. But you said they now have to go year to year with Le'Veon Bell. I disagree with that slightly, because it's no longer year to year. It's now final year. Because Le'Veon Bell, at the end of this year, is a true free agent. He's certainly not giving Pittsburgh a discount. And if Pittsburgh was skeptical about giving him a long-term deal after year four and after year five, I have no reason to believe they're going to want to give him a long-term deal at what will now be the most inflated salary, because it will be coming off the $14.5 million he's making this year after year six. Like, to me, this is their final year with the Killer Bees, with Brown, Ben, and Bell all together.
Well, they floated the idea of putting a transition tag on him after this season, so it would be a lesser number on the increase. I think it's around $17 or $18 million. So who knows what would happen? I just know the Steelers are trying to keep that core group of skill position players around long enough to try to get another championship while they still have Big Ben as the quarterback.
Which is why I look at this year as a critical year for Pittsburgh. And last year, listen, they week three against Chicago, they lost a game to a bad Bears team where Bell was unproductive. It was part of his unproductive September. They win that game, or any of the games they lost, but that was the one bad loss they have. The other one was to Jacksonville and New England during the year. They are the one seed, and maybe we're talking about a totally different situation. They obviously didn't win that game. They maybe could have if Bell was fully operational, and that was the difference between them going on the road. Well, they never even got to New England, but them having to play Jacksonville in the first round, having to play the Titans the way the Pats did. Like, it is critical early on that Le'Veon Bell is full go, and last year in September he was one player, and the rest of the year he was another player.
So break this down for me a little bit. How did we get to this point? Who's more at fault here? Is it the organization or is it the player, at least with this specific situation?
Well, it's the general manager. As a player, you only have one form of recourse if the organization is not going to pay you what you feel like you deserve, especially somebody as accomplished as Le'Veon Bell, and that's withholding services. That's the only thing that he can do in this situation. So I do believe that he'll show up at some point this week. But, I mean, in terms of making sure that he's ready to go, if the organization wanted to be at training camp, they should have went ahead and paid him. Now, to Nick's point, why it's so important for this team to get off to a hot start, when you recognize the landscape of the AFC, the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're trying to compete for a championship, you want to do everything that you can to get that number one seed so you can have home field throughout, and then you'll get the lesser of the other teams coming out of the wild card round so you don't have to match up against a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars. You want to play that four seed if you can help it. So that's why it's so important for this team to win as many games as possible. You know that the New England Patriots, they're going to win 11 or 12 games. You can book it. You know that you have to exceed that if you plan on having the number one seed in the AFC. So that's why it's important for Le'Veon Bell to get out to a fast start, because I played on a team going against the Pittsburgh Steelers when I was with the Baltimore Ravens two times each year. We knew that the game plan had to be to stop 26. It wasn't about 84, it was about 26. Stop him, and then you'll deal with everybody else. That's how important Le'Veon Bell is to this team's success.
And you're absolutely right. The one seed is not just about home field in the AFC Championship game. I got ahead of myself there. It's about who you play in the divisional round leading up to the AFC Championship game. The Patriots got the Titans. The Steelers got the Jags, who beat them both times they played last year. So they never got that rematch with New England. I think this is the most talented team in the AFC. When fully operational, it took them until October last year to become fully operational. We'll see how long it takes.
Jenna, young players ask me all the time, how can I get paid? And I tell them, you have to force the organization. You have to play or put yourself in a position that your leadership and your playing ability, this organization is going to miss it if you're not there. Another way not to get paid is put yourself in the drug program or get suspended for something off the field, domestic violence. Then you can't force them. The guys we saw get paid, they forced it by what they did on the field and all. Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, OBJ, Kirk Cousins, all these guys, Aaron Rodgers, they forced the organization. He has not forced the organization because he said, you know something? When he failed those drug tests in 15, I'm not going to get in trouble in 16. Got suspended. You know something? I'm done with that. Got suspended again. So now they're saying, oh, give him a long-term contract. Pittsburgh Steelers, they are not forced to pay him.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.